The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here today practicing with you. My name is Fugan, I've practiced with some of you for many years, and some of you guys, this is the first time we're sitting in the same space. And it's actually new for all of us today. This is completely new and fresh, if we can bring ourselves here right now in this place, and with this beautiful spring breeze coming in. All of your faces, so beautiful today. There's a expression that's part of our tradition that comes to Zen from the tea ceremony in Japan, Ichigo Ichie. Just this time, just this meeting, if we can bring ourselves here, plant ourselves here, then we can be present as our lives unfold. One time, one meeting, right now, this moment. So if you're just trying to figure out what we do in this weird Kinhin line, or if you've, you know, trod these floorboards for years, it's all new. And this is what we bring, and we create this space together, this community, this sanctuary. So I came this morning from the Cape Cod, where I live up in Massachusetts. And yesterday I was sitting with Hyannis Zendo, which is our sangha out there. We're an affiliate of Village Zendo. It's like the Zendo summer beach house. Out on the Cape, and so you guys should come practice with us out there. And sitting this morning, it was really quiet in here. There's a little bit of street noise coming in, sounded like wind in the trees. Some car horns might have been the geese on the marsh out back. It was quiet. Yesterday at Hyannis Zendo, it was really loud. The geese were really raucous, and the squirrels and chipmunks were doing some weird thing outside, dragging things back and forth. And our resident dog that sits with us, who is usually a brilliant sitter, better than everyone else, she was a little bit riled up by all this action. And these soundscapes, they kind of hold the sanctuary. And I love them both. I love, when we're here and the jackhammers are going. And I love it at home when we start hearing the screech owls who came out last night when we were sitting, first time this year. This is part of what holds this sanctified space. This space of investigation that we have. So recently I was walking on a beach near Hyannis Zendo, and the section I was walking on is a barrier beach that separates the open ocean from a marsh, a wetland. And the sandy part of that particular beach is really narrow and rocky. And then behind it, there's a thin strip of low dunes, and it's thick with this beach grass. And these dunes are the habitat of lots of different species, most noticeably the piping plovers, who are an endangered species out there. And right now, the chicks are just coming out in the plover population. And behind the dunes is a wetland, and this is full of flora and fauna, egrets, great blue heron, osprey. It's a wonderful, vibrant place. And I was out there recently, and it was after a storm, and I noticed that the storm had broken through this barrier beach. So the ocean was going directly into the wetland, where usually the barrier beach blocks the ocean from running into the wetland. And then I went back the next day, and the dune had started to reform. The beach grass that holds the dune together had sprung back up. And this beach grass is really resilient. It can be buried under 3 feet of sand and find its way back to the surface. This grass holds together in this sort of matrix that keeps the dunes in place, and it guards from the erosion, the natural erosion and the human-generated erosion that is a constant out on Cape Cod. And the Cape, as you probably may know, is a pretty recent land formation. It's about 18,000 years old, which in geological time is really, it's just an infant. It was formed when the glaciers came down during the last ice age and they were pushing sand and debris in front of them. And then they retreated about 20,000 or 18,000 years ago and left this cape that looks kind of like this. And this is when you live on the cape, this is where you point out, we live here, you live here. And this is the standard gesture of Cape Cod. And the cape isn't supposed to last very long, just a couple thousand more years and maybe less, with our human-generated climate change. Things are in constant flux out there. About a century before it was called Cape Cod, Spanish travelers dubbed it Cabo de las Arenas, the Cape of the Sands. And it's a shifting, kind of moving place where change is sometimes obvious, but it's always constant. When the Europeans did arrive on the Cape, it was already inhabited, of course, and the people living there were the Wampanoag Indians, and they called themselves the people of the first light, being way out in the far east of the East Coast. And they lived in harmony with this environment, this sandy beaches and the erosion. They did some very sustainable farming and fisheries. And then the pilgrims showed up, and in contrast, the settlers began this very intensive farming of the Cape. They cut down a lot of forests and burned them, or they burned a lot of forests to add nutrients to the soil to grow their crops. And they grazed cow and cattle on the beach grass, and were soon surprised that the dunes began blowing away, of course, once the beach grass was gone. And they also then grazed sheep on the Cape, which pretty much denuded the Cape, and it was almost totally deforested during that time. So all the woods on the Cape now, or practically all the woods, are second or third growth because of this intensive agriculture out there. And the results were devastating. A lot of the ecosystems never recovered, and some are only recovering now. Our Zendo, Hyannis Zendo, that's the name of the town, and it's the name comes from a bastardization of Iano, who was the sachem, or the chief of the Wampanoag, when the pilgrims arrived. And there's this life-size bronze statue of Iano sitting on a boulder on Main Street in Hyannis. He's kind of slump-shouldered. He's got this, at least my interpretation, this very dispirited gaze, and he watches the tourists and the traffic go by day and night. So the beach grass, though, was really on my mind last weekend, last Saturday, when we had an eye-opening ceremony on the Cape, a rededication ceremony of the temple. And the eye-opening was a little bit late. We've been sitting with this Buddha for 10 years, but we only got around to opening the Buddha's eyes now. And 10 and a half years ago, the Hyannis Zendo was a kind of dusty, unfinished basement with a cracked foundation and rotting sill plates all around it. There were vibrant termite and carpenter ant populations trying to do away with the building, and lots of spiders. And we still have lots of spiders, but the rest of it has been transformed from this dusty place into a very beautiful, small zendo. And the sangha has been in constant change out there as well. Some of us have been sitting together for 10 years out there, but we've changed dramatically in those years. And new people have come and gone. Most notably, for me anyway, Joan, who many of you know, was part of our sangha out there for many years, and now he's come closer to home here. But many others have come and gone, and we've had births and deaths out there. People have gotten sick. Some have gotten better. Some haven't. You know, it's basically all the joys and sadness and wonders of life have happened. These shifting sands have been held in that sanctuary out there. So ceremonies, like the eye-opening ceremony, are powerful reminders marking our path, our direction, and our commitment to the practice and, more importantly, to one another. And this eye-opening ceremony and dedication renewed a sense of the space out there as a respite, a sanctuary where we can look closely and have some space, especially from, you know, what we traditionally call the three poisons of greed, anger, and ignorance. You know, and that's kind of shorthand for a massive range of detrimental states of mind and ways of being. And this greed, anger, and ignorance are on such vibrant display of late. We can't avoid it if we have our eyes even slightly opened. And so on the shifting sands of the Cape, or maybe in the shifting rental market of Lower Manhattan, I've been asking what constitutes a sanctuary. It's been on my mind, and I thought I would bring up a koan that helps clarify this. This koan is from the Book of Serenity, and it's basically a simple parable that we use as a teaching story to gain some insight into our lives. As the world-honored one was walking with the congregation, he pointed to the ground with his finger and said, "This spot is good to build a sanctuary." Indra, the emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground, and said, "The sanctuary is built." The world-honored one smiled. So Buddha points to the ground, right here, right now, this very floorboard that we're looking at. This place, this time, this is a good place to build a sanctuary. Right here on this 11th floor suite, back on the Cape in that dusty basement, you know, sitting in a park, riding your bike to the Zendo on the subway. This is a good place to build a sanctuary. Buddha is pointing to this place right here and right now. And so we need to be present enough, this ichigo ichie, present to this meeting. And we're meeting each other, but we're bringing ourselves to this meeting. We're meeting this moment. And then we can experience this sanctuary in our lives. And sometimes it doesn't feel like a refuge at all. There's another version of that same story. And in this other version, Dipankara Buddha says, this is a good place to build a temple. Dipankara in Pali means the light bearer or lamp bearer. And he was an ancient Buddha who lived long before Gautama Buddha, the historical Siddhartha Buddha. And in this other version of the story, an earlier incarnation of Siddhartha, of Gautama, spreads his hair on the muddy ground for Dipankara to walk on. And then Dipankara also points down and declares the spot ripe for a sanctuary. And in some tellings, it was this action of Dipankara Buddha that got Gautama Buddha on the path towards his enlightenment. This is light bearer. He brought the light. And in that story, Indra, the king of the gods from the Buddhist pantheon, is not the one who plants the blade of grass. Instead, an old man plucks a blade of grass and plants it and says, the sanctuary is built. A god or an old man. And both of them are taking this action, planting the grass right here and now. This insubstantial blade of grass, something so fragile and temporary, planted and the temple is built. And how can this insubstantial thing, this coming to this one meeting, this one time, our presence, how can this be our sanctuary in the face of so much suffering that we're witness to? And not only is this blade of grass seem so fragile, but in the Zen literature and the lexicon of Zen, grasses have pretty clearly defined meanings and connotations that seem, at first at least, to be at odds with sanctuary. The 100 grasses come up again and again in our literature, and they're shorthand for the world of form and difference. Grasses represent the incalculable diversity of things in the world, of people and animals, landscapes and places, of rocks, trees, pillars and lamps, of our own thoughts and ideas that keep coming up. These are the 100,000 grasses. And in short, it's what we call the 10,000 dharmas, all the difference in the world. And as human beings, we really easily get stuck in the grasses. In this world of form, we cling to it, to our ideas of how things are and how they should be. According to Mumon, who compiled the Mumon Khan, grasses and bushes are where ghosts cling. The grasses are the things we get stuck on, our attachments, ideas of who we are and what we are, how we should be and how you should be. And the grasses are places where we cling to our opinions, our entrenched opinions these days, our habits of mind and body. This ever-arising greed, anger, and ignorance, the distractions that keep us from bringing ourselves to this moment, from being present. Lately, I've been noting in myself this maybe not new, but a new version of anger that's been coming up in reaction to mostly the politics of the day. And I've been referring to it as kind of indignation seems like the best fit for this feeling that's been present of late. And it's indignation mixed with sadness, I guess. And I perceive myself and my views as being unfairly trampled by a whole other set of opposing views and people. And of course, in my mind, my way is right, and this other way is wrong. And that's how we do it. And I feel somewhat powerless in my indignation. You know, papering over or denying climate change, you know, our really inhuman immigration policies, this mistreatment of refugees and prisoners, the blatant and not so blatant racism, misogyny, gun policy, you know, hampering freedom of the press, even trashing our American princess or duchess or whatever we call her. I mean, all of these things are enough to bring up this indignation in me, this righteousness that's so hot and the little bit of despair that's kind of frigid. And this indignation that may have been fostered in my kind of gung-ho response to the politics of the day has started leaching out into other parts of my life. I feel that same feeling in strange places. A voice or a name can bring it up, you know, Mitch McConnell. It's there, you know, Devin Nunez, Trump. I mean, the names or these gestures, you know, the sound of a voice comes up. And it starts to come up, you know, at my work, you know. You're playing the wrong accompaniment pattern for my solo. Oh, you're trampling on this, you know. Why aren't you doing that the way I want you to do it in the kitchen? I mean, these ridiculous things. And that habit has really formed in me. I see it expressed. And when that's happening, I wonder where is my refuge, my sanctuary? I'm really a ghost in the grasses being dragged around. It's like a hell being is embodied me. And I can't respond, but I'm just being led around by this habit. Being stuck in our emotions and stories of the world is something that we're all familiar with, I think. And, you know, we come here in part to escape that, to loosen our clinging to the grasses. And so we sit and we let go, we drop away, and we feel some freedom, some space. But the world of form and difference, the 10,000 grasses, old age, sickness and death, politics, relationships. This is where we live. And when we drop off body and mind, we're not dropping away from that. The bushes and the grasses are really the material of our lives. And not just our confusion, but our awakening as well. The old man plucked the grass and planted it with purpose and awareness. He showed up. Here is your sanctuary, right here, right in this dualistic world. Protesting the injustice, you know, writing letters to prisoners, showing up and acting. This is planting the grass. Once, Manjushri asked Sudhana to pick medicinal herbs. He said, "If there is something that's not medicine, bring it to me." Sudhana searched all over, but there was nothing that was not medicine. Nothing that's not medicine. all the variety of our grasses are it. Sudhana then went back and told Manjushri, there's nothing that is not medicine. Everything is included. Manjushri said, gather something that is medicine. Sudhana then picked up a blade of grass and handed it to Manjushri. Manjushri held it up and showed the assembly, saying, this medicine can kill people and it can bring them to life. We can use our grasses to break our attachments and to act, to let go of this hungry ghost, this clinging spirit. In the Tenzo Kyokun, the instructions to the cook, Dogen says, take up a blade of grass and construct a king's treasure land. Erect magnificent Buddha fields. The grasses, these are our material, our sanctuary. Sometimes we take a blade of grass and use it as the 16-foot golden body of the Buddha. And sometimes we use that 16-foot golden body of the Buddha as a blade of grass. As bodhisattvas, we integrate so deeply into the material of our lives that nothing is left out. And that's the intimacy. Here, when form and emptiness interact, like we chanted this morning, there's nothing left aside. As Dogen says, form is nothing but form, and emptiness is nothing but emptiness. You are completely it. So putting down a blade of beach grass, a sanctuary can be built. Looking closer, we see that that beach grass is part of this matrix holding the dunes together, that keep the sea from running us over, washing us away. Our individual lives and moments are part of this community that we're building together. We plant grass as a sangha. Indra does it, Shakyamuni, Dipamkara Buddha, Sudhana, the old man, a young girl, all of you and me, Iano sitting on that rock. And this is where the community is built, the sanctuary is realized, right in the midst of our daily lives. So I'll leave you with a poem from our eye-opening ceremony. Walk around back. The grassy marsh flows into the sea. Seagrass temple, revealing what has always been. The sanctuary is built. Sitting together, the world-honored one smiles.